Welcome to Chapter 90 of the Kinsmen Die podcast, home of fantasy fiction based on Norse mythology that's written and read by me, Matt Bishop. In this podcast, I read my first novel, Kinsmen Die, one chapter at a time. And with each episode, when it makes sense, I provide some commentary about the source materials I've referenced in the text. This week, we're back with Vafthrudnir. The last time we were with him, he'd been badly wounded in a fight with Freya. Let's rejoin him now. Chapter 90. Vafthrudnir. Vafthrudnir bolted upright, hands pressed over his ears, awakened, startled, by the hungry howling of wolves right outside his tent. Heart pounding, his first thought was that Yig's wolves had found him again. His wife, nudged him with her elbow and, with terrified eyes, looked a question at him. Her ears were also covered. He drew in a deep breath. The tense air was stale and warm. But he didn't smell wolf. The sound roughened, more like a draugr trying to escape its barrow, or the screaming of a mad Saethkoner riding a roof. Then it deepened and grew as mournful as a battlefield full of dying Jotun. He knew the sound now. How could he have forgotten? It was Goldtooth's horn. He had heard it blown before, 3 times. The first sounding had filled the slack sails of the nearly defeated Aesir army. The second winding marked the abduction of Idun and the fruits she warded, while the third had marked the start of the last war. This was the 4th time. Loki had succeeded. Vafthrudnir's vision blurred as he fought back the unexpected sob that would unman him. Frowned, not understanding, until sadness bloomed in her eyes, like summer's last fragile flowering. They sat that way for 12 heartbeats, unmoving, not touching, simply looking at each other. Tears fell from her eyes. He held his in. 12 heartbeats later, he realized his ears were merely ringing. He removed his hands. Silence had returned to Jotunheim. Well, comparative silence. The heavy fabric and hides of their tents dulled most everyday noises, but not the uproar that followed the Gjallarhorn. Everyone had heard it, but unlike Vafthrudnir, they didn't know what it meant. War had begun. His people were terrified at the prospect, but they didn't know the plan. Not all of them, anyway. Many of those here would indeed die, but only so that their kinsmen could live, because an Aesir had been murdered. He rolled from their furs and began dressing. Clapped her hands to get his attention. "Where are you going?" she asked in the hand speech. He tugged on his breeches and tied the fastening. His fingers moved in reply. "The Skrymir will want to discuss what just woke us." "So, the plans reaped its sad harvest, then?" He nodded. Her head fell forward into her hands, long black hair obscuring her face. Her shoulders shook. He pulled on a shirt and a heavier wool tunic. His shoulder ached where it always did, every morning, since the Skrymir had hauled him down from the tree. That old pain had been joined by the new ache, mirroring where Freya had wounded him and Fimbulthul alike. He sat to pull on thick wool socks, but instead embraced both for himself and for her, rocking slightly until pulled away. She smiled sadly, reached out, and wiped a tear from her cheek. Her fingers danced again in the Jotun speech. "I'm glad to see your tears. He did try to help us." But for a wan smile, he didn't reply. He leaned into her and hugged her again, tightly, burying his face in the soft fragrance of her hair. Perhaps they could have done it differently. Baldur had been kind over the last 20 winters, but Yig's hatred reached back far longer. There was no mercy in Yig's heart, so there could be none in his own. Loki's vengeance was a tool, a means to an end. He didn't like using it. A knife in Yig's back would have been better, but only fools refuse to use the weapons at hand, especially in a fight to the death. And now that the deed was done, he clung harder to and she to him. It was hard to stay here in the present and not remember the long-ago death of his first wife. Her old, weathered hands had clutched his until they shuddered as her spirit's bright spark rode winter's breath back to the roaring cauldron. Images of the frozen Jotun he'd sent into the depths of Utgard's many lakes, the same ones he'd pulled out over the last 15 winters, floated up into his mind, their faces just below the surface. Most of those faces were young Jotun who should have lived long, fruitful lives, but had instead slept beneath the cold waters. At least now they had another chance. Many would die beneath Aesir spears, but many more would live. And not in this wasteland either, where a living child hadn't been born in nearly 10 winters. All those would-be mothers and fathers would have another chance, too. He pulled back, cupped her face between his hands, kissed her gently, and whispered, "I have to go. You'll be here when I return."
"Depends on how long you're gone. At midday, I'll be working with the Saethcorner, but I'll be back by the evening meal."
She managed the last word without a laugh. Calling it a meal was a joke. Boiled water flavored with what roots they could scrounge. Some oats. A few fish each week. All the Jotun, here in Utgard at least, ate like that. He pulled the inner tent flap back to duck through. She called to him. He glanced back, expecting to meet her dark eyes, but she was staring at the spot where their empty cradle had once stood. When she did face him, her expression was fierce.
"No pity."
The Vathurnir nodded and left, his cheeks dry once more. Well, folks, that was chapter 90 of Kinsmen Die. I hope you enjoyed it. This chapter is mostly backstory with a touch of catching up. We see again the far-reaching sound of Heimdall's Gjallarhorn, and we see that the Jotun plan is unchanged. Next week, we're back with Odin. We haven't seen him since chapter 78, so it will again be interesting to see where he's at. Until then, if you have the time and inclination, please rate or review the podcast. That helps boost the show's visibility, as does sharing it. As always, I'm going to read from both the Bellows and Larrington translations of the Havamal, the sayings of the High One, Odin. Bellows, verse 90. "The love of women, fickle of will, is like starting over ice with a steed unshod, a two-year-old restive and little tamed, or steering a rudderless ship in a storm, or lame hunting reindeer on slippery rocks." Larrington, verse 90. "Such is the love of women of those with false minds. It's like driving a horse without spiked shoes over slippery ice, a frisky two-year-old badly broken in, or like steering in a stiff wind a rudderless boat, or trying to catch, when you're lame, a reindeer on a thawing hillside." Thanks for listening.